Good afternoon. It's Joel Whitaker, editor of Kane's Beverage News Daily, and this afternoon we're talking with Bruce Herman, who has left the East Coast and is out in California as the president of Independent Distillers USA, which is not a name that is necessarily familiar to everyone in the alcohol beverage industry. So good afternoon, Bruce, and tell us a little bit about Independent Distillers and what took you to California.
Well, thanks, Joel. It's a pleasure to be here and appreciate the time. Independent Distillers is a company. Actually, we were founded back in the mid-80s by a man by the name of Michael Irsay from New Zealand, and one thing led to another, and he built a rather large business in New Zealand and expanded it to Australia. We do some business in Canada, and about 2.5-3 years ago, unfortunately, Mr. Irsay had passed away. It was the company was then purchased by a private equity group, which is where I came in, and I was asked to figure out whether we could do some business here in the U.S. And I wrote a business, analyzed the market, wrote a business plan, and the board of directors liked it. And back in December of 2009, I was asked to become president. And since then, we've established a business here in the U.S. I oversee Canada. And basically, we're focused on, first initially was the RTD market or the ready-to-drinks. But what's really worked well for us are these ready-to-drink shots called twisted shots. And this year we're going to sell, we're in approximately 40 states. We're set up a wholesale network with most of the larger wholesalers, such as RNDC and Young's Market Company, Sunbelt, a little bit with Southern Wines and Spirits, a number of independents depending on the marketplace. And we're now expanding from twisted shots. We look and see what trends are interesting, and so one of them is obviously flavored bourbons, and we're about to release a flavored bourbon with honey, which we call Killer Bee, and we'll shortly release a flavored bourbon with cinnamon, which we call Hot Licks. And then we've got other products. We've just released back in April a chocolate milk with vodka in it called Naughty Cow. So I'm having I've been in beverage alcohol my entire professional life. I have a great wine cellar, and you asked me what brought me to California. It was the wine and wine and spirit business. But bottom line is I'm having more fun now than I've ever had in the past.
Well, I can certainly believe that. Tell us a little bit about Hot Licks and also Killer Bee, I guess, what's in them and that sort of thing. The overall brand name for them is Woodstock, isn't it?
Yeah, we use the bourbon is our Woodstock bourbon, which is prepared and comes from Kentucky. And we started out with Hot Licks and Killer Bee in our little shots. Our shots have two compartments. So on one side, we have this our Woodstock bourbon, and on the other side, we had a honey liqueur for Killer Bee. And on our Hot Licks, it's bourbon on one side and sort of the spicy cinnamon on the other, and it mixes in your mouth. Then from there, we said, well, why don't we also put it into 750s, and instead of having two compartments, we'll pre-mix it. So Hot Licks, the other product out there that's similar is Fireball. And what we find is there's this phenomenon in bourbon, just straight bourbon without any flavors, was growing fairly popular in the U.S., obviously with Jack Daniels and Evan Williams and Jim Beam. But then kind of like the phenomenon we see in all these flavored vodkas, people started flavoring bourbon, which adds some sweetness to it and makes it even easier to drink. And so we're just following that trend. So we've got ours flavored with cinnamon and Hot Licks, with honey and Killer Bee. And we've got a few other flavors that we're working through and tasting and testing and we'll be getting some label approvals on those. So we see the bourbon, flavored bourbon market expanding much the way you've seen the flavored vodka market expanding. And it really makes it interesting, fun, and we try to react as quickly as possible to the trends that we see and see what's selling. We try to be a quick follower into the different segments of the business.
Sure, and that makes a lot of sense. Also sounds like a lot of fun. Well, I looked at the labels for these two products, and they're pretty, I want to say edgy, but I don't think edgy is the right word, but they're definitely something designed to get your attention on the shelf there, aren't they?
Well, exactly. I mean, that's part of it. You know, we're not with a huge, you know, Jack Daniels or Jim Beam or any of these big liquor companies. So we need to, therefore, we don't have many millions of dollars of advertising. We're very judicious. Right now, we do a lot of trade advertising. We'll be working into social media. So it's so important for us to stand out on the shelf, and we don't want to be a staid-looking product, so we do try to be. I think, Joel, I think edgy is probably a good adjective to use, both in our packaging and in our naming.
Good. Now, tell me, you said you don't have a big advertising budget, and I gather from the way you phrased it, you're doing no consumer advertising. So how are you introducing these new products to the market? And actually, I don't think you told us, but isn't independent distillers like the largest or something in Australia?
Well, yeah, independent distillers outside of the United States, and especially in Australia and New Zealand, are rather large beverage alcohol companies that do a huge amount of business in RTDs or ready-to-drinks. Cruiser's a big brand. Woodstock Bourbon and Cola's a big brand in New Zealand. And we tried that here in the U.S., and it didn't really work, so we've discontinued those types of products and have focused now on our Twisted Shots business and are now going to be focusing on full-strength spirits, so the Hot Licks and the Killer Bee and Naughty Cow are three examples of that. But in both in New Zealand and in Australia, independent distillers is well-known, and as a matter of fact, this past October, Independent Distillers was sold by the private equity company to Asahi. And we all know Asahi beer in the U.S., and they own their big, big businesses in beverage alcohol as well as other beverages that are non-alcoholic. So they certainly saw a great opportunity. They spent approximately $1.5 billion Kiwi dollars. I don't know how that compares to yen, but that would be close to around $1 billion US. And so obviously they see a real future for the company. And so I went from working with private equity now back into the corporate world.
Well, I don't know whether I ought to ask you the question, but I will. Which do you like better, private equity or the typical corporate world, or the plus and their minuses?
No, that's a good question. I you know, when I was working within private equity, I thought that was really interesting, and I liked it, and I had been burned out on the corporate world and all the policies and procedures, and now we're back to the corporate world. But I have to admit that because we're relatively small and really a startup here in the U.S., I've sort of been able to, with some really talented people, run this business much the way we would like to. So it's a hybrid. So we try to keep innovation, making quick decisions, keeping meetings down, and moving forward and seeing opportunities and then trying to capitalize on them as quickly as possible, which is sort of that private equity sort of ethos and culture. And then are now bringing in some of the corporate longer-term planning. We know that we've got plenty of money behind us, and our Japanese owners are very interested in, you know, sort of what are typical or stereotypical of Japanese of the long-term view. So it's important for us to make short-term numbers, but they definitely take long-term long-term view, and they're very supportive of us beginning to start advertising towards the consumer, and maybe this answers that question, which is the key thing is distribution and getting our products out onto the shelves. And we've gone from zero to over 11,000 accounts in the U.S. We think we'll end this year at about 12 or 13,000. Next year, we're targeting 19. So as we build that expansion and have our products available for sale, we're now beginning to transition into doing some more straight-on consumer advertising. And I think that's going to come a little more from social media. And then our advertising is when we have opportunities to do tastings and on-premise promotions and so on and so forth, is how we currently are impacting the consumer. And then, frankly, in stores, having our shots sitting on the counter, being in the right place on the shelf, trying to get into the cold box, getting the staff to recommend us, and so on and so forth. So that's really been the focus of how we've approached the consumer. But initially, it's getting distribution, setting up the wholesaler network, and now we think we have an opportunity to begin to spend some of our marketing dollars moving forward, trying to get a more direct connection to the consumer.
Well, that's great. You've talked three or four times here, or mentioned setting up the distribution network in the last minute or so, which makes me think
sure.
that you're still looking for distributors, are you?
Well, we are to a degree. We're in almost 40 U.S. states, so we're pretty much just finalized our last distributor connections. I think we're good there, but obviously it's something that myself and our VP of sales raced out and have spent an awful lot of time convincing key wholesalers to take us on, and then with success breeds more success. Our next biggest challenge, frankly, and what's really remaining for us are the control states, where you have to go to a board, a liquor board like Pennsylvania, for example, which is close to where you live, and present your products to them, and then the board decides as to whether they will allow you to sell them in the state. And that's been a little more challenging with our shots, although two control states that we're in right now on spirit, on the spirit side, is Ohio and, believe it or not, the state of Wyoming for our shots. And for, we just got it then listed with Mississippi and our Naughty Cow, which is a little more of a traditional product in the 750 size. We've been in New Hampshire. We're in Mississippi, and as the opportunities present themselves, we're presenting them to the number of control states to try to get into the control boards. And, you know, we're cautiously optimistic. It's a long process.
Yeah, I bet it is. And I suspect it helps to be able to show them that in the licensed states you're doing well already, because I suspect that their risk tolerance is a little bit low.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are very bureaucratic. They have, and they take social responsibility very seriously. And they are interested to know that the states around them are doing well. And that helps to add to the argument as to why they should accept your brands.
Sure. Now, these products are priced where? A little bit below Jack Daniels, I think?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, because we don't have that heritage and the name, what we try to do is be priced. Our pricing strategy is to try to be between $2 and $3 less than the leaders.
Mm-hmm. Now, somebody, are you using the phrase that I've heard so often that, you know, we're, what is the phrase? The gist of it is that you deliver exceptional quality at a lower price or something like that? Are you?
Yeah, I mean, we always try to, you know, price value and so on and so forth. Absolutely. I mean, we work very, very hard on making sure that we have really good product in the bottle. And because, you know, we're lean and mean, which you've heard those sayings before. We can work on lower margins than some of the larger companies, and so therefore we can pass that savings on to the consumer.
Sure. I remember many years ago I was talking with a guy who was a publisher at McGraw-Hill, and you know, he was bemoaning the fact that he had a couple of newsletters he would love to sell to somebody because they were not working well for McGraw-Hill, you know. And he explained to me that it would work well for anybody else but a big company because, you know, he had to help pay for Harold McGraw's waterfall and his, you know, jet that flew him around the country and so on. And a small guy wouldn't have to do that. So I know exactly what you're talking about there.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We all fly coach. We don't fly first class. We don't have private jets. And, you know, we keep plowing our profits back into our new product development and frankly into the pricing. Good margins for wholesalers, good margins for retailers, and fair pricing to the consumer.
That's a good strategy. How about your packaging? Talk to us a little bit about that. What is distinctive about the packaging on these new products?
Well, on the Naughty Cow, it's actually a wrap as that goes all the way around the bottle, and we use a voice box, which helps us with the packaging, and they do a lot of wine labels, and they do a number of spirit labels, and I've got a very strong vice president of marketing and Peter Hayworth, who's got a really good eye for design. But obviously, these products need to stand out. So the names are important, like Naughty Cow. We thought that was cute. The way Naughty Cow, the wrap, it looks, you know, chocolate covering and so on and so forth, chocolate inside with vodka. And then when it comes to our Killer Bee, if you've got the label in front of you, you can see that we've got actually kind of a interesting sort of Killer Bee on the label. We think the name will stand out, and we put it in a traditional square bourbon bottle, and our label will be wraparound, much as many, many other bourbons are. Those are sort of some of the visual cues that denote bourbon on the shelf, shall we say. And then Hot Licks, a similar way, but there you can see we want to emphasize hot and spicy. So you can see the flames coming out. And so the labels and the names are whimsical, maybe a little edgy. We need to be different, and we want to make it fun. These are not products that people are going to sit there and contemplate. We want to have impact on the shelf. We want to make sure that they taste good, that they're fairly priced, and people, drink them for, you know, whatever the occasion is, and not save just for, you know, somebody's birthday. So reasonably priced, and it's an awful lot of fun.
It sounds to me like you're having a ball.
I am.
You know, and that's a wonderful thing. With this build out of the distribution network and the almost doubling the number of retail outlets you expect to be in next year.
Yes.
I have to ask you, are you hiring? If you are, what are you looking for when you hire?
Oh, fine. Well, thank you for asking that. You know, I feel, in a way, with all that's going on, and we've just come out of the political, all these elections, and talking about entrepreneurs and who hiring and who isn't, and obviously we know this has been a really tough number of years with this recession, with an awful lot of people out of work. But we've gone from 2 years ago from, frankly, a company of three people. So I'm counting myself, a CFO, and Peter, to 2 years later now that we are a company, when I count both the front of the house and the back of the house here in the U.S., we're pushing 20 people. So we've hired reps and managers out in the field to call on distributors, to call on accounts, to manage our business. We've just hired a trade marketing person. Again, we're not here to take rookies out of college and train them. So we look for people who have sales experience, preferably in beverage alcohol, trade marketing experience, beverage alcohols preferred, but not required. In fact, the person we've just hired has food experience. And in the back of the house, from accounting to a business analyst who's good with playing with spreadsheets and dealing with IRI and Nielsen and so on and so forth. And in this coming year, because we're on a calendar year, we've got 8 more openings that we'll be hiring for, 4 for the back of the house, which, within the sort of finance and production, because we outsource production, but I need somebody to help manage it as we're building our business. And even though we've been buying everything through our production facilities in New Zealand, where we have our shots business, our bourbon business, we're now producing here in the U.S. Why take bourbon from Kentucky, send it to New Zealand, put it in a bottle, and send it back? So we're, you know, we're expanding, and I'm look, and we'll be looking for 4 more key field positions. So I feel, in a way, we're doing our part to help hire and help build the economy, and taking risks, and we feel really good about the business.
That's really good, and I'm glad to hear you're hiring some people and that you're looking for staff for next year, because, as you say, there's a lot of people out there who can, frankly, use the opportunity. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, amen. Exactly.
You're using a contract producer for your product base for your bourbon. You want to tell us who that is?
Sure. We're using here in Northern California, Franklin is bottling. So we purchase our bourbon from a very well-known producer in Kentucky, but we have an agreement that we're not supposed to say who produces it. But they're a very reputable company. And then we bring the bourbon, transport it here to Northern California, and then that's where the Franklin company mixes and blends it with the different ingredients, you know, for the cinnamon or for the, with the honey. Peter and I are there tasting it. They're really very, very good. And then they bottle it and label it for us, and then we then move it back to a common warehouse so that our wholesalers can pick it up.
Sounds like you've got a system that's working for you at the moment. With you using a contract distiller in Kentucky, do you expect to be doing this for quite some time, or do you think the day will come when you'll have your own distillery operation?
I'm expecting to work with them for a long, long time, to tell you the truth. I'm a firm believer in outsourcing certain aspects of the business and those people who are really experts. And today, the overhead and the cost to then build your own distillery, I just don't think would be worth it, frankly. And so we have, with this company, have long-term contracts with them because, again, New Zealand purchases an awful lot of bourbon. If we were just a complete startup and nobody knew who we were, I think we'd have an awful lot of trouble finding bourbon. But we actually piggyback on the contracts for New Zealand and Australia. So we're part of a much larger company, and in that case, it's been very, very positive.
Sure. This is one of those cases where it really pays to be a part of a large company and yet be a small entrepreneurial tenant within it.
Right, with the sense of entrepreneurial culture, but it's been great to be part of independent liquors out in New Zealand and Australia, and that's helped us dramatically. And hey, we also outsource our health plan and outsource our payroll to the people who know how to do that. So we've been able to keep our head count down and yet provide all the services that are necessary. So I don't always think you can do it better yourself, but we'll see. We do 10 million cases at some point. I may be doing all those things myself, but right now we selectively outsource certain aspects of the business.
Well, certainly the payroll thing is one of those things you don't want to screw up, number one, and number two, it's a function where there are a number of people who have a lot of experience and who can probably do it for you very efficiently at the moment.
And no, you're right. In fact, not to plug them, but we use Insperity here in the U.S., and they do the payroll, and they do our health plans and our 401k, and it's worked out quite well. And, you know, when you talk about payroll, every state, depending on where you have people, you've got to pay certain taxes, and everything's a little bit different. And so we go to experts to do that. It's not worth it for us at this point to try to insource that.
Yeah, and especially with people scattered around the country, that would be a huge headache.
Right.
One thing to do it in New Jersey or just in California or just in Maryland or just in Georgia, but, you know, if you've got one guy in New Jersey and another guy in Maryland and so on, it would be nothing but a nightmare.
Exactly. You got it.
Yeah. So you're very positive about the outlook for next year, and sales are going well. You told us that, obviously, because you wouldn't be talking about 19,000 retail points unless sales were going well.
Yes.
Is there anything we haven't asked you about the business here?
No, other than, again, we're pleased to talk with you and appreciate the opportunity and hope that if there's some consumers or people in the trade that will either listen to this as, if it gets on a podcast, certainly read your newsletter. We invite them to try our product, and more than happy to answer questions for people, and want to continue to have fun in the business and give people an opportunity to join the company.
Great. And give us just in 30 seconds or so a little bit about yourself personally. You came from where, and you started, I know, in New Jersey way back when. Tell us your life story.
I came out of college and started in the wine business, was a merchandiser and then a salesman, and then worked for Shefflin and Somerset, which was a joint venture owned by Diageo and Moët Hennessy. And it was involved with both spirits and wine. Worked in the wholesale side with Young's Market Company, helped them build the estates group. And then went to Foster's Wine Estates and was there for 5 years. And they went through a lot of changes and stepped out, started a consulting business, wrote a business plan for the private equity company. They liked it. And they said, would you like to do it? And I realized I'm much more of a line person than I am a staff person. I said, sure. And then the rest is history. And it's been just a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad it's been a lot of fun. I hope it continues to be. And I hope you're a really tremendous success out there. And then in a couple
Thanks.
Of years, we check back with you that, you know, we'll be able to recount glorious things having happened. So what I would like you to do, Bruce, is just stand by for a minute here, because I'm going to wrap this up, then I want to talk to you privately for just a second. So we really appreciate Bruce Herman joining us. He's the president of Independent Distillers USA, which is relatively new in the business here. They've got some hot new products, Hot Licks and Killer Bee versions of their Woodstock bourbon brand, and we're looking forward to them doing great things. So thank you, Bruce, for your time, and bye-bye, everybody.